side, just for the exterior. The whole thing will probably come in under a couple G's. Barclay grumbled,
That's probably doable.
I'll have IT put together a fake website for the company. I'll make it look like it was just raided. And I'll do a Facebook page for my cover identity. Simple stuff. But good enough to fool Reardon if he checks. Which he will. Barclay grunted once more.
Hold up. You gotta convince me, detective. Tell me more about Reardon.
Don't have a lot. I've data mined him. He's rich, lives fast, owns a Maserati, but it's slower than his Porsche. He's got a fancy boat in Connecticut and another one in Lower Manhattan.
Well, well, said Sarani. We're going after a whole new class of perps, moving up in the world.
Or down, Gabby corrected, frost in her voice. He kills families, remember? At least Kepler wasn't the only one she tapped with her whip. Reardon's single. Never married. Though my CI tells me he sometimes claims he's divorced, and sometimes he's a widower. He's got a loft in Tribeca worth $3 million and a company on Wall Street. It's legit he's involved in venture capital work, the Norwalk Fund. But he only made $1.2 million last year, according to his taxes. His lifestyle's five times that. So the investing's a cover for the money-washing, arms sales, and other things he does.
Maybe he just lies to the IRS about how much his legit company makes, Kepler suggested.
Not about his cover business. Why would he do that? Who'd do that? It's suicide. He's not stupid, Brad. Ouch.
Sarani asked, And the partners? Andrew and Sam? They're connected to the Norwalk Fund?
I checked out the company, of course, trying to find their full names. And no, they're not.
Of course. So, what do you want to have happen out of this?
Barclay asked.
He was known for his love of the big picture.
I'll get close to Reardon, then lay out some bait, give him and Andrew and Sam the chance to hook up with my informant in something big. I'll be an innocent, so they'll have to take me out.
Nail them on criminal conspiracy, Barclay said.
Exactly. My CI, his name's Joseph, will be wired. As soon as they meet with him and mention the kill word, we can move in. And get warrants for their offices and houses. If we're lucky, we can find something linking him to the earlier hits. Weapons, records, cash transfers.
Seems like you've thought this through. Like you always do, detective. Tell me how you want to run it.
She explained, My cover for the set will be Gabriella McKenzie, manager for the phony business I mentioned. I'm calling it Prescott Investments. It'll look like my boss, Charles Prescott, has been doing some kind of illegal stock trades. And you two have been investigating him for that. It's time for the bust, but he's disappeared. You come up to Reardon and me on the street. You break the news about Prescott. That'll get Reardon's attention. Then, after you leave, my Joseph comes up too. He'll tell me that he was doing some illegal deals with Prescott and he's pissed he skipped town. He'll ask me to hand over this mysterious list that's worth millions. Barclay asked,
What's in the list?
A good question, Kepler reflected. Doesn't matter, she said dismissingly. Or maybe not. It's a MacGuffin, Gabby continued. Could be anything. But I've decided to make it seem to Reardon like it's a list of underworld kingpins involved in a plot to take down the stock exchange for a day or two and clean up in a big way. I'll drop some clues for him to figure out. Like, one of Prescott's clients is a German terrorist and arms dealer. I'm calling him Gunther. The others are brokers or traders, mostly overseas. And I'm working on a lease that has to be signed up in the next few weeks for that property on Bankers Square in Manhattan, where the stock exchange is putting in a new communications system. Reardon may figure it out from that, but to be on the safe side, I'm going to hide this memo in some files that I give him to examine, like I didn't know it was there. She slapped another document on the table. From Charles Prescott to Investment Syndicate. Re, updated timetable. 2nd of the month. New York Stock Exchange Technology Center on Bankers Square in Lower Manhattan opens. 4th of the month. The lease for warehouse at 7 Bankers Square is effective. Our engineers arrive with appropriate equipment to disable Technology Center's fiber optic system directly below warehouse. 6 of the month. U.S.-based investors exit jurisdiction to safe havens. Recommended: Switzerland, Cayman, St. Kitts, St. Thomas. 8 of the month, 11 a.m. The event occurs at warehouse. NYSE suspends trading. 8th, 9th. Completion of short sales transactions made throughout the year. Distribution of profits to investors. The target date's around Columbus Day, so I'm calling it the October list, the people in the syndicate Prescott put together.
Love it,
Kepler said. He was truly impressed. If he played for the other team, he could easily fall in love with Gabriella. She continued, Joseph's also going to demand back the deposit he paid Prescott. $400,000, something like that.
Whoa.
Hold on.
I can't come up with buy money like that,
the captain said quickly. No, I won't need actual cash. It's enough for Reardon to know the stakes are high. If the deposit's 400K, then the operation's dealing with serious cash. It'll seal the deal. Barclay asked,
Why use your CI for the part? Why not an undercover detective?
Credibility. If Reardon checks around, he'll find Joseph's connected with the Sedutos. But like I said, I will need at least a couple of other officers, in addition to Brad and Naresh. I want Elena Rodriguez from Narcotics.
I'll try to swing it,
Barclay said. Gabby said firmly, Make it work out. I need her. She's good.
What's her role in the set?
Barclay asked. She'll be a fellow employee of mine at Prescott. Serrani.
You said threaten you. How's Joseph going to pressure you into giving him the list?
He'll kidnap my daughter. Kepler blinked at this, surprised.
She has a daughter?
Gabby was the least maternal person he could think of. She continued, Reardon will stay close to me while I run around town trying to find the October list and the 400K. I'm sure he'll call in Andrew and Sam. They'll pretend they're helping me get my girl back. But what they'll really do is cut a deal with Joseph to sell him the list or go into business with him.
What if Reardon doesn't bite?
Kepler asked. Then you've wasted a day or two when you could be playing golf.
He doesn't play golf, Serrani said. He watches golf.
Kepler gave him the finger, subtly, and an affectionate glance.
And I'm out $2,000 for the set,
Barclay grumbled. She looked at him as if he were a husband making an extremely petty remark about starch in his shirts. Only Gabby McNamara, of the 30,000 cops in the NYPD, could nail brass with a look like that. So, Paul, can we go forward?
Or use their first names.
He debated a moment.
You got 3 days, tops. We roll it up on Monday, whatever you find, or don't find.
Deal. Thanks. Her gratitude extinguished fast. Now a lot of the work's going to be convincing Reardon this is legitimate. As if she were mentioning she had to drop her laundry off, Gabby said, I need to shoot a cop.
Did she glance my way when she said that? Kepler wondered.
Barclay said firmly,
No weapons discharges on the set. Can't happen.
I need to, she said, and the words were all the more forceful because she was so blasé. If Reardon has any doubts, that'll put them to rest. We'll rig a gun with blanks or training rounds. She steamrolled ahead. We'll get some youngster from patrol. He'll be jazzed. Kepler said,
No.
Everyone turned to him, Gabby most piercingly. He said,
You can't have Reardon next to you. The patrolmen or witnesses would see him and he'd become a suspect. He'd go to ground or back off.
Good point. I hadn't thought of that. I'll make sure he's at a distance.
Barclay pointed out,
The press, the public, everybody'll go apeshit a cop gets shot. Suddenly it's front page New York Post. People are going to ask questions about him.
She said, It'll happen on a deserted street. Minimize witnesses. We'll use a fake name. I've checked and there's nobody on the force named Fred Stanford Chapman. My date to the high school prom. We'll get a fake name tag and have a phony press release ready. Tell the head of the patrolman's union it's part of a set.
She fixed Captain Barclay with a sniper rifle gaze. And she kept mum. He said reluctantly,
I guess it'll work.
I've got the whole set orchestrated. Gabby dug through her purse. Kepler noticed a roll of yarn, blue and green. He remembered she relaxed by knitting. It seemed strange at first, but he wasted time on Angry Birds and Sudoku and, yes, watching golf. She extracted a single sheet of paper and put it on the table in front of them.
This is the script day by day starting this afternoon. Memorize it now. It gets shredded before I leave. There'll be variations and improvisations, but I'll text you as plans change.
The three men eased forward and read. Undercover Operation 2340-42. Codename, Charles Prescott Op. Friday. Detective McNamara, a.k.a. Gabriella McKenzie, makes contact with subject Daniel Reardon. Saturday. Detectives Kepler and Serrani contact Detective McNamara and subject Reardon, Charles Prescott, fleeing city. Confidential informant Joseph contacts Detective McNamara and subject Reardon about kidnapping of daughter, Sarah, extorting Detective McNamara to provide October list and money. McNamara and Reardon attempt to find October list and money. With assistance of Detective Elena Rodriguez, Detective McNamara and subject Reardon obtain access to Manhattan's set location, Prescott Investments. Locate October list. At said location, Detective McNamara and subject Reardon are confronted by Detectives Kepler and Serrani, but manage to smuggle October list out of Prescott Investments. Adds to credibility of its importance. Clues given to subject Reardon about possible financial scam. Detective McNamara and subject Reardon remain undercover, attempting to find money while appearing to negotiate with C.I. Joseph as the kidnapper. Sunday. Detective McNamara and subject Reardon attempt to find money at townhouse of Charles Prescott's lover, Upper East Side. Intercepted by Detectives Kepler and Serrani and patrol officer using fictional name Fred Stanford Chapman. Stage shooting of Chapman. Detective McNamara and subject Reardon flee. Detective McNamara feigns injury in escape. If he hasn't done so already, subject Reardon will probably contact partners Andrew and Sam under guise of helping Detective McNamara secure release of daughter. Subject Reardon and either-or Andrew and Sam meet with C.I. Joseph with intent to engage in conspiracy to defraud and murder Detective McNamara. C.I. or site of meeting will be wired. C.I. will relay location information to Detective McNamara. Tactical takedown of Reardon, Andrew, and Sam by emergency service. Barclay was obviously impressed, though he tried not to show it.
Man, it is a script.
She said matter-of-factly, with people like Reardon, you don't improvise. He kills families. Kepler asked,
You're sure Reardon will run with you?
He'll come along. I'll make sure of it.
How are you going to snag him?
Every Friday afternoon, he swims at Battery Park Health Club.
Or plays racquetball or tennis,
Kepler pointed out fast.
She swiveled toward him. The only reason to join that particular club is for tennis or the pool. My data mining shows he's never paid for court time or bought balls. Ergo, he swims.
I stand corrected. And she speaks Greek. Or was it Latin? What a woman. The other team was looking more and more interesting.
After that, he goes to Limoncello's for drinks.
What's Limoncello's?
Restaurant on the harbor.
Gabby was getting pretty proficient at talking to Kepler while not looking at him. She continued to Barclay.
He generally has scotch or red wine. I'll have some small bottles of each with me. I'll see what he's drinking and go to the ladies' room, spill some on my sleeve, make him think he's stained my blouse. I'll take it from there.
On reflection, Kepler was thinking, Gabby might not be the best woman in the world to date. What do you mean that you feign injury? Serrani asked, tapping the script.
I'll have to seem vulnerable, to make Reardon believe I'm no threat. I'll probably fall, then bite the inside of my cheek, to make it look like I'm bleeding from a broken rib and ruptured lung. Also, it seems Reardon's a bit of a sadist. My being in pain will be a turn-on.
You'd be armed? Serrani asked.
How can I be? I'm an office manager of an investment company.
A glance at the script she'd written.
Awaya, then,
Kepler offered.
Gabby said, no.
Frowning as if infinitely perplexed he didn't get it. Sarani said,
we've got some good gadgets from the tech department, Gabriella. Surveillance gear, I mean. We've got a GPS and mic and a cigarette lighter.
You'd give me a cigarette lighter when I don't smoke? What's Reardon going to do with that?
I'm just saying, something.
No, no wires. And no third-party surveillance either. You two and everybody. Keep your distance. I can't take any chances that Reardon will tip to the set. That's the biggest danger. He hasn't survived this long by being careless. Now read the script until you've got it memorized.
She pushed the page forward and, like students in front of a stern teacher, Sarani and Kepler did as she instructed. When they'd nodded, Gabby swept everything up and walked to a shredder. She plugged the unit in and made confetti. Then she slung her purse over her shoulder. She said to the detectives,
I'll email you more details tonight. Intercept us on the corner near my apartment around 10 or 11.
Sarani recited, Detectives Kepler and Sarani, contact Detective McNamara and Subject Reardon, Charles Prescott, fleeing city. Her first and only smile.
Good.
Kepler said,
One thing?
Gabby regarded him seriously.
Yes.
You see this Joseph. You trust him?
Pretty much I do.
Pretty much, Kepler echoed.
Okay. Joseph's boss? Sedotto?
He's trouble, you know that. Is there any chance Joseph's running you? I mean, maybe he's thinking that Reardon's a source for some big money.
And he'll take you out, too, when he gets what he needs.
The best confidential informants were morally always just an inch away from the perps they were embedded with. Would Gabby be pissed off that he'd questioned her judgment in trusting this Joseph? But she said only,
I appreciate that, Brad, but I've assessed the risk and it's acceptable. Not much we can do about that.
Then she was gone.
Well, that's one hell of a gal,
Barclay said. A noun that neither Kepler nor his partner wanted to go anywhere near. The captain then said,
I want eyes and ears on her.
But, Sarani pointed out, she said no surveillance.
I don't care what she said. I want to know everything she says and where she goes and who she sees, 24/7. This is too dangerous to leave her spinning in the wind. Get on that now.
Chapter 1. 8:20 a.m. Friday. 2 hours, 40 minutes earlier.
I'm going to tell you what I need. I need someone dead. Someone who's bad and who's been troublesome and has caused me and other people a great deal of pain. It's a simple goal, a killing, but there are complications. A lot of complications.
Peter Karpenkov paused, as if these words were too dramatic. Or perhaps not dramatic enough. Ineffectual in conveying the magnitude of the sins he wanted justice for. Today, his weathered skin was more wan than normal, and he seemed 60 years of age, not his actual 50. The man's bullet-shaped head, dusted with short, thinning hair, was looking out the window of Karpenkov Transportation Incorporated, a medium-sized company which he had run for years, inherited from his father. The building, unimpressive and scuffed, squatted in Midtown near the Hudson River. He had enough money to build a large, modern facility, but he kept the company's original building. The same way he lived in the same 2,000-square-foot red-brick detached house in Brighton Beach, Brooklyn, that had been in his family for nearly 100 years. His eyes still averted, Karpenkov continued speaking.
I didn't know where else to turn for help. Because of the complications, you understand. And because I would have a clear motive for this man's death, I'd be a suspect. That's why I need you. You can make sure that the motives aren't what they seem to be. You're good at that. No, not good. You're the best.
He finally turned and his eyes met those of the woman across the desk. Gabriella McNamara looked back easily, taking all this in. Go on, Peter.
Oh, and for this job, I'll double your fee. Plus all expenses, of course.
Karpenkov didn't need to mention the latter. He always paid for her expenses when she did a job for him. A murder or anything else. Gabriella's green eyes focused on his, which were, curiously, two shades of gray. The mob boss continued with a raw anger in his voice.
I wish I could kill him myself. Oh, I do wish that. But...
Gabriella knew Karpenkov had not killed anyone in a long time. Still, the lean-faced man with the two-tone eyes and matching gray stubble on his scalp looked fully capable of murder at the moment. She felt warm breath on her hand. She looked down. Karpenkov's huge dog, Gunther, had ambled from his bed in the corner to lick her palm. She scratched the spiky gray and black fur between his ears. Gabriella knew animals. She'd hunted with bird dogs from when she was a teenager. She and the Russian's dog had bonded when he was a puppy. He was huge now. A month ago, Gunther had killed a hired assassin who'd lunged at Karpenkov on a walk in Brooklyn. Lightning fast, the dog had snatched the assailant by the throat and shaken the life from the screaming attacker. Murdering the man who'd hired him, a Jamaican drug lord, had been Gabriella's most recent job for Karpenkov. The dog licked her fingers again, nuzzled, and returned to his bed.
What's his name, the man you want dead?
Daniel Reardon.
I don't know him.
Now it was Gabriella who looked at the Hudson River through the window, which was free of curtains. The putty in the frame was curling and needed replacing. She felt an urge to strip out the old wads and replace them in paint. She did a lot of the repair work herself, in her apartment in the city and at her hunting lodge upstate, in the Adirondacks, where she frequently hunted, both with her Nikon camera and with her Winchester 270. Karpenkov now touched his cheek, then the fingers settled on the chin. Rubbed it as if searching for stray bristles he'd neglected to smooth off that morning, though the skin seemed perfectly planed to Gabriella. He muttered words in Russian. Gabriella was adept at languages. Since she worked frequently in Brooklyngrad and the other Eastern European immigrant areas of New York, she'd learned Russian. She understood what he said. She asked,
"What's Reardon's story?"
"You know Carol?"
"Carol?
The daughter of your assistant, Henry?"
"That's right."
"Pretty girl? Teenager?"
20.
"Henry's been with you a long time." Gabriella had noted upon arriving that Henry had not been at his desk in the ante office, and he was not here at the moment. Usually, he was a constant shadow.
18 years. He's like a brother to me.
Karpenkov's tone, more than his earlier words, explained that this would be a hard story to tell. He turned and poured some Stolichnaya into a glass. He offered it to her. She shook her head. He tossed down the whole glass, then began the story. Reardon picked Carol up in a bar. Took her back to an apartment his company keeps for clients, the Norwalk Fund. Somewhere on the east side in the 50s. He seduced her, though it was really rape. He drugged her. He took pictures of her. Disgusting pictures. He tied her down on an iron coffee table. He used these tight knots, he knows, because he sails boats. It was like a game with him. She couldn't move. Then he beat her with a riding crop. His voice choked.
The pain was terrible. The pain.
After another shot of vodka and a dozen slow breaths,
then he and another man, they took turns. Well, you understand. That was filmed, too. Her face was visible, not theirs. Reardon threatened to put the videos out on the internet. My God, Carol was in college. She taught at Sunday school. That would destroy her life.
Gabriella took this information in with a faint nod. Her heart-shaped face revealed no reaction. To her, these were just facts. Though she knew and liked Henry, she felt no personal interest in the matter whatsoever. The ease of making this separation was part of her gift. If gift it was. Karpenkopf continued.
Reardon used the pictures to force Henry to divulge information about my operation. Computer files, passwords. Reardon and his associates broke into our system and stole nearly $400,000 before we shut down the servers. Henry tried to kill himself. He took pills. I went to the hospital and he confessed what had happened.
After a pause,
I forgave him.
Carol?
What can I say? She'll never be the same.
Gabriella nodded. On his large desk were papers and files and printouts and a large collection of model cars. Expensive ones, metal. You could open the doors and hoods and look inside. They were really quite some works of art. Aside from the phonograph records the professor had given her, Gabriella didn't collect anything. There were no trophies in the upstate house. She hunted for the meat. And weapons? They were simply tools of the trade, to be discarded or swapped if a more efficient one came along. So, Reardon, he's after your company? Karpenkopf Transportation didn't transport much except laundered money, weapons, and prostitutes, though despite such limited specialties, it made a great deal of money.
I think what happened with Carol was opportunistic. Reardon struck up a conversation with her, learned her father worked for a profitable company, and he took advantage of that.
He and this other man? It's just the two of them?
No, there are three who work together. One is Andrew. There's an enforcer, too, first name Sam.
Karpenkopf added solemnly,
I think Sam was the second man with Carol.
That's their modus operandi? Finding innocents and exploiting them? Karpenkopf laughed.
Modus operandi. You studied Latin, I remember. Your father told me that. He was very proud of his schoolgirl.
Her father had gone to the police academy right out of high school, but he appreciated education and had indeed been proud that his only child had graduated with honors from Fordham. He himself had taken continuing education courses, specializing in history, and would spend hours talking about New York's past with Gabriella and her mother. They'd good-naturedly dubbed him the Professor, and the nickname had stuck.
It's one of his M.O.'s,
Karpenkopf now said. His voice trembled. The sentiment of a moment ago was gone.
They come up with a lot of different schemes. Extortion, blackmail, kidnapping, outright murder. Sometimes they masquerade as business consultants or insurance experts. They get close to executives, find inside information, learn their weaknesses.
Businessmen? Insurance? Gabriella mused. She found this an interesting strategy. She filed the fact away for her plans, which were already forming. So you want Reardon dead, and you want me to find out who Andrew and Sam are, and them dead too. And your money back?
That's right.
Karpenkopf pulled a model car closer to him. She thought it was a Jaguar. She didn't know much about autos. In the Adirondacks, she kept a 1,000cc Honda motorcycle. The mob boss continued.
I don't care about the money, but...
Respect.
Exactly. Respect and revenge. You see what I mean by complicated?
It was, yes. But Gabriella lived for complications. She straightened her jacket, small white and black checks, houndstooth, and smoothed her skirt, which was as gray as the Hudson's unsettled water this morning. From her orange leather coach bag, Gabriella took a roll of knitting, blue and green yarn, and began absently working the needles. Click, click, click competed with the sound of trucks from outside Karpenkopf's window. He said nothing. Tell me what you know about Reardon, she asked matter-of-factly, which was her way of saying, yes, I'll take on the job. Of course I will.
He's in his late 30s. Good-looking. Here.
He displayed a picture of a dark-haired businessman. Good-looking enough, yes, she decided. Broad shoulders. Gabriella felt a stirring, though only partly because of his physique, and curious resemblance to the George Clooney of 10 years ago. The attraction was primarily due to his narrow eyes. Cruel, they seemed. Savvy. predatory.
Ink?
Apparently no tattoos, Karpenkov said. But he has a scar on his chest and shoulder. He set a bomb in an arson scam and it went off prematurely. Apparently he claims he got it saving two children from a car crash, or when somebody saved him from a crash. He changes the story to suit the scenario. He has a degree in business from an Ivy League university, and he has a legitimate investment company he runs as a cover, the Norwalk Fund I mentioned. Makes a lot of money and spends it, cars and boats. But he's also a sociopath. Last spring, Andrew and he killed a man who threatened to be a witness against him. Reardon could have shot the man when he was alone. But he killed the family, too. I have to believe part of him killed them because he enjoyed it. The wife was tortured and raped. Sadist, I was saying, like with Carol.
Gabriella, knitting. She closed her eyes, letting thoughts churn. Karpenkov remained silent. She'd worked for him for years, and he knew how her mind spun. When to speak, when to demur. For several minutes, she was in a very different place, making order out of tangle. And he said not a word. When she surfaced, she was for a split second actually surprised that she wasn't alone. She recentered herself. I have some ideas. I'll need somebody else to help. Muscle, not afraid of dirty hands. Better if he didn't have too much of a connection to you. Karpenkov thought for a moment.
There's somebody I use on a freelance basis. He's good, very smart.
And he has no problem with? The sentence didn't need to be finished.
None at all. He's done a dozen jobs for me. He's here now, as a matter of fact, downstairs,
Karpenkov said. Let's talk to him. Her eyes settled on Gunther again. He looked back. His tail thumped with pleasure. Karpenkov made a call, politely asking the man to join them, then disconnected.
What are you making?
A nod toward the yarn, green and blue. A song she liked. James Taylor. She said, it's going to be a shawl. She gazed at the tips of the needles. Ideas were coming quickly. 5 minutes later, there was a knock on the door and Karpenkov called.
Come in.
A large man with blonde hair, thick and curly, and a square-jawed face stepped into the room and shook Karpenkov's hand.
Peter?
His eyes were confident, and he glanced at Gabriella without curiosity or lust or condescension.
This is Gabriella McNamara.
Joseph Astor.
The man's face was a mask as he regarded her. He apparently didn't know who she was, or care. That was good. Reputations were useless, like praise and insults and high school sports trophies. Hands were shaken. His skin was rough. She detected a faint scent she identified as shave cream, not aftershave. He sat in the other office chair. It groaned. Joseph wasn't fat, but he was solid, built like a supporting column.
You go by Gabriella?
Yes, I hate nicknames. To her, Gabby was a particular gnat. The only nickname she'd ever liked was her father's. To him, she was Mac, as he was the professor to her.
And,
Karpenkov said,
I hate it when people call me Pete.
The other of the triumvirate here said nothing, but she sensed Joe was not a felicitous option. The dark red needles tapped their dull tips. Karpenkov explained the situation about Reardon to Joseph, much as he'd explained it to her. Then he added,
Gabriella is taking on the job of finding these men and eliminating them. She's asked for an associate to help.
Joseph said,
Sure, whatever I can do.
Silence, save for the clicking of the needles. Finally, she said to Joseph, What I'll be doing is putting together a set. You know the word set?
Police talk for undercover operation. Like a play, sort of.
I still have to think out the details. I'll do that over the next few hours. But in essence, I'll get some people at my regular job to put together an operation, a sting, to catch Reardon and his associates. It'll seem like some police officers are after me, so that Reardon will believe I've got access to a lot of money and some secrets or something like that. With the cops after me, he'll be inclined to believe it's legitimate. I can talk my captain into it, I'm sure.
Police?
Joseph said, confusion hazing his face.
Your captain?
Gabriella said.
I'm a police officer.
You're...
I'll call and set up a meeting with them, my captain and a couple of other detectives, in a few hours.
The police?
Joseph repeated, though with less uncertainty than before. Karpenkoff filled in.
Gabriella's a decorated NYPD detective. That job has been helpful to us, as you can imagine.
Joseph gave no reaction other than a time-delayed nod. He then lifted an eyebrow.
How did you happen to end up there?
My father was NYPD too, she said calmly. I followed in his footsteps. I was interested in photography.
She's good,
Karpenkoff broke in.
Real good.
He gestured to a black and white landscape on his wall.
That's one of hers.
Joseph reviewed the image without reaction and looked back. Gabriella continued.
I took a job with the crime scene unit as a photographer. One day we got a call in Queens, a shootout. Nobody checked my last name, and it turned out that my father was the victim.
Well,
Joseph's brows dipped.
There wasn't any mystery. He was killed by friendly fire. Two junior detectives just emptied their guns at a kid they thought was an armed rapist. He wasn't either of those, by the way. The investigators screwed up and had the wrong man. The supposed subject was wounded superficially. My father, he was backing them up, was hit 6 times and died instantly. When the lead detective realized who I was, they took me off the case. Conflict of interest, of course. But I shot plenty of pictures anyway. I wanted to record who the killers were, his fellow cops.
They went to jail?
Joseph inquired.
No. My father's death was deemed accidental. They were suspended for 2 weeks with pay, then returned to duty, like nothing had happened.
They're still on the force?
They're no longer with us, she said quietly.
Then she looked at Joseph.
But aren't you really asking how I ended up here, working with Peter?
Yeah, I guess I am.
After Dad's death, my mother fell apart. She was sick, emotionally sick, even before it happened. His death destroyed her. The department and the city didn't do anything for her. It was like they couldn't admit they'd screwed up. But Peter showed up on our doorstep. He saved her life, got her into a hospital. His wife took care of her, too. It turned out that Dad had worked for Peter all along. I decided I was going to do the same.
I didn't want her to at first,
Karpenkoff said.
But she was persistent. I'm glad she was. Ralph McNamara was helpful getting my organization inside information about investigations and the like. Gabriella's been helpful with that and with other skills.
Gabriella didn't tell Joseph that her father's nature was ingrained within her. She could recall dozens of incidents at school where she'd ended up in the principal's office, often along with security or even the police, after she'd lost it, madly attacking a girl or boy who'd bullied her or another student. The professor's status as a respected detective protected her from the juvenile system, and he helped her learn to control her urges toward violence. But control only. Never eliminate. Now Gabriella disposed of family history with a click of knitting needles.
So with Reardon, we'll have the NYPD help us.
Ideas were continuing to come fast. This was how it always worked. The mind is an inventive and fertile creature. Some thoughts she discarded, some she wrestled into shape, some she let stand as perfectly formed components of her scheme. Her palms were damp with sweat, and her heart beat a fast, visceral rhythm. Joseph asked,
"What can I do?"
"I'll explain to my captain and the police that you're a confidential informant working for me. That'll let me keep you anonymous. We'll use only your first name. I'll be Gabriella Mackenzie."
Her eyes had taken in the brand name on the label of a bottle of whiskey sitting on the credenza behind Karpenkoff.
"Gabriella Mackenzie, a businesswoman of some sort. And you'll be extorting me for a lot of money."
A faint thud as an idea emerged. It was gold.
"We'll pretend you've kidnapped my daughter."
"You have a daughter?"
"No, I don't have any children. But you come up to me when I'm with Reardon and tell me that you've kidnapped her, and you'll kill Sarah if I don't get you what you want."
"Your daughter's going to be Sarah?"
That's right. It's the name of my horse. A filly I stable upstate and ride on weekends. But we'll download some pictures of a 6-year-old. Videos, too.
Joseph nodded.
People are idiots how much they post online.
Isn't that the truth?
What am I going to want from you that's worth kidnapping a little girl?
Another idea occurred. Sometimes they fell like snow.
A document. A secret list, very valuable. A list that everybody wants, which means Reardon'll want it too.
A MacGuffin, Joseph said.
What's that?
Peter Karpenkoff asked.
Gabriella said, Hitchcock.
She was surprised Joseph knew the term. Not because he seemed ignorant, just the opposite. But he was only in his 40s, and the film director had coined the term more than a half century ago. She explained to Peter Karpenkoff,
A MacGuffin's a thing, an object that everybody's chasing after in a suspense movie. The treasure of Sierra Madre, the Lost Ark, the knock list of secret agents. Doesn't matter that it doesn't even exist. It's what drives the story forward. I'll come up with some bomb plot or something equally ridiculous. Blow up a bank or a stock market. The people on the list will stand to make a fortune from it.
Joseph said,
What about we call this list something mysterious? Give it a name.
Karpenkoff suggested,
I have an idea. How about the October list?
Gabriella nodded. Good, I like it. But why that?
The wife and I went to the Hofbräu last night, 3rd Avenue. Thursday's Oktoberfest night. The best wiener schnitzel and sauerbraten in the city. Oktoberfest. October list. Just occurred to me.
Perfect. It's mid-September. I'll drop clues that whatever's going to happen will happen next month. Now, Joseph, you want this mysterious list, and some money, too. Reardon stole $400,000 from Peter, but let's go for $5,000. Interest payment.
The Russian nodded.
How will you get the cash from them?
Joseph asked. She considered this for a moment.
Ah, Reardon'll come up with it for me to pay as the ransom. He'll hit one of his accounts and cough up the money. Of course, what he'll really use it for is to pay you, as an incentive to do business with them. Only you can tell them how to best use the October list. They'll need you for that.
Joseph, too, had a thought.
Let's start out with $400,000, but to add believability, maybe you could miss a deadline, and I could up the ante to $500,000.
Yes, I like that.
Her eyes shone.
And when I miss that deadline, you send me something of my daughter's to show you mean business.
She happened to glance down at her fingernails, which were dark red.
Maybe. I know. A bloody finger.
What?
Karpenkoff blurted. She gave a smile.
Just from a mannequin or a doll. Get some fake blood. Or buy a bloody steak.
Joseph nodded as if this were the most logical idea in the world. She continued to him.
We'll play it out till Sunday night. You pick a target zone, a safe house somewhere, and arrange to meet them. When they show up, you kill them.
Joseph considered this.
I've got a warehouse in Soho I'm just about finished with. I'll use that. They think I've kidnapped your daughter, right? The place has a room in the back. I'll put on some kids' videos in there. When they go to check it out and open the door, I'll take care of them from behind.
Then he frowned.
But what'll you tell your captain? If it's an undercover sting, won't they be expecting to get evidence from a wire or something?
It was a good point, but she'd thought that through.
I'll tell them that you, my CI, went rogue, killed Reardon and the others and stole the money, then vanished. Nobody trusts CIs anyway. It won't look too great, a failed operation, but the fact is my captain won't be very pissed off. After Reardon's dead, we'll search his houses and office. We should be able to close a half dozen cases he and his crew were behind. And they'll have saved the expense of a trial.
Brilliant, Gabriella,
Karpenkoff said reverently.
Tap, tap.
Gabriella added a lengthy row to the shawl she was knitting. She had another thought.
You know, Peter, it would be helpful if it looked like there was someone else after me. It'll draw Reardon into the set more if he feels there's another player after the October list, too. Makes it seem that much more valuable. Any thoughts?
Now Karpenkov, sitting back, was the one scanning the ceiling with his gray and gray eyes.
Would it make sense if this person died?
Interesting idea, she replied. It could work. Why?
I'm aware of something.
Yes?
There's someone... This pissant from Brooklyn thinks he's the godfather. Hal Dixon, do you know him?
I think I've heard the name.
He's been talking about moving into Manhattan and Jersey. I've been thinking about taking him out. This could be the chance.
Gabriella smoothed her skirt as she considered the additional player. She said to Karpenkov,
You could meet with Dixon. Tell him you've heard that there's this October list and that I have it. Give him the job to get it. When he comes after me, I'll make sure nobody can see me and take him out. Afterward, I'll tell my captain it was Reardon who did it.
This brought up another thought, and the yarn ended up in her lap.
There's a personal situation I need to deal with, too.
She squinted slightly as she explained,
I've been having some trouble with someone. It goes back a month or so. I'd finished a job and had taken care of the body, but the police were closer than I thought. I ducked into a movie theater and picked up this guy so we could leave like a couple. It worked, but the problem is he didn't go away. It cost me a couple of dates. He's turned into a bit of a stalker. He spies on me, shows up outside my apartment. He could eventually make the connection that I work for Peter. He's even taken pictures of me when he thinks I don't know.
Her lips tugged into a grimace.
He's pretty sick. He's got a shoe thing. He starts salivating when he sees me in high heels. Takes pictures of me with his mobile, and always makes sure he gets my shoes in the frame. Damn pervert.
She shrugged.
It would be helpful if he died, too.
Joseph asked,
What's his name?
Frank Walsh.
She described him and added,
Let's frame Reardon for his murder, too.
She resumed knitting. The men looked at the aluminum needles. She got the impression they'd be wondering if she'd ever killed anyone with them. She never had.
I know what would work. After Reardon and I find the list, I'll arrange to get it to Frank for safekeeping, maybe have it delivered to him. I'll make sure Reardon's prints are on the envelope or box or whatever I put it in. Peter, could you arrange for one of your men to be in the building we use for the set? Pretend to be a janitor. I'll have him deliver it to Frank.
Sure. How about Raphael?
Yeah, he's good.
Then she said to Joseph,
After the package is delivered, on Sunday, you go to Frank's, shoot him, and get whatever evidence has Reardon's prints or DNA on it. So it'll be at the target zone when you take Reardon and his associates out. But get Frank's mobile and wipe his hard drive. He'll have pictures of me on it.
Joseph nodded. Then he said,
Your associates, the detectives, your captain, they'll want to run surveillance on you. That could be a problem.
She grimaced.
I know. Even after I tell them not to, they'll try to put some eyes on me. I'll just have to keep it in mind and make sure I lose any tails or electronic snooping.
Putting down the knitting, Gabriella sat forward. She was pleased with Joseph, liked that he was smart and that he looked back into her eyes so easily, without challenge or timidity or flirt.
Now, before we go any farther, I want to say something. Obviously, you're familiar with movies. You know what method acting is?
I've heard about it. Don't really know exactly.
It's when actors mentally and emotionally become the characters they're playing. For this to work, to fool Reardon and make sure both of us survive, I'm going to be the office manager and single mother I've created, Gabriella McKenzie. Gabriella McNamara will cease to exist.
She didn't share with Joseph or Karpenkov that this would be an all-consuming transformation. She'd move into a different place entirely. She'd repeat the name of her fictional daughter over and over again, aloud and to herself, until the girl came alive. She'd come to believe that if she didn't deliver the October list and the cash, she'd never see her beloved Sarah again. She'd feel regret at the death of Hal Dixon, at Frank Walsh's too, even though he was in reality an irritating complication in her life. She'd feel genuine fear the police were after her. And she'd form a real attraction to Reardon, as if they'd mutually picked up each other in the bar.
a spark igniting what might turn into a real relationship. She might even have sex with him. And after Joseph shot Reardon dead, she'd go through a period of mourning. Gabriella was good at what she did precisely because she tricked herself as smoothly as she did her victims. She looked levelly at Joseph. You understand?
Yes.
I need you to do the same thing.
I get it.
Joseph looked off for a moment.
You know, talking about acting, what do you think about this?
I could be like that actor who died. The one in that Batman movie a few years ago? Heath Ledger, the Joker. Taunting, unpredictable, eerie.
I like that. And what was his philosophy? She reflected, thinking back to the film. The only good is what furthers my interest. That'll be your driving force. Joseph cocked his head.
The only good is what furthers my interest. I'll remember that. I like it.
Then he asked,
One question. At the kill zone? You'll be there too?
She considered this. No, they won't want me there. Reardon and one of the others will want to meet with you alone. They'll leave me with a babysitter, probably Sam, a safe house somewhere.
A look at Karpenkoff.
Most likely the same place they took Carol, that apartment in Midtown, the one his company keeps.
Then she said to Joseph,
I'll text you the exact location when I know.
You'll have a weapon with you?
Joseph asked.
No, I can't. But I'm sure Sam will. She thought back to Reardon's pattern. Reardon will probably be planning on coming back to the safe house after he cuts a deal with you. Probably to finish me off himself. And considering what he did to Carol, I imagine he and Sam may have other plans for me first. More rope and knots.
So after you kill Reardon and Andrew, get the key to the safe house and come over there. If there's a chain or security bar on the door, I'll take it off. You text me when you're close, and I'll distract Sam or Andrew or whoever my babysitter is. I'll tell him I've figured out the mystery of the October list or something like that. You let yourself in. Whoever's there probably will think it's the other two returning and not be too suspicious. But we should be careful. When I hear the door open, I'll say one of two things. If I say, Is my daughter all right? That'll mean Sam doesn't have a weapon out. He doesn't suspect anything. It's safe to just walk in and shoot him. But if I say, Daniel, what happened? Then that means he is suspicious and has his weapon. Get back into the hall. It'll be a firefight. I'll take cover and do what I can from inside.
Joseph nodded.
Is my daughter all right? Means I'm green-lighted to shoot. Daniel, what happened means take cover.
That's right. Got it. Good.
Gabriella slipped the yarn and the half-finished shawl back into her bag. She glanced affectionately at Gunther, who wagged his tail once more. She rose, shook Karpenkoff's hand, then Joseph's.
So, let's get to work.
Part 1. Foreword. We have Stephen Sondheim to thank for this book. Several years ago, I was listening to a National Public Radio interview by the inimitable Terry Gross on her Fresh Air program with Sondheim, one of my favorite musical theater composers and lyricists. One of the plays he discussed was Merrily We Roll Along, which happened to be perhaps the only play of his I had not seen. I was fascinated by the fact that it began in the present and moved back in time. Of particular interest was his comment about a song that meant one thing in the present and meant something different when first, well, later, introduced. I happen to love the concept of a fractured timeline. Look at Stanley Kubrick's second best film, The Killing. Strangelove, not 2001, is my number one. Or Pulp Fiction, Memento, Back to the Future. And, of course, the classic Seinfeld episode, The Betrayal, which was an homage to Harold Pinter's own reverse chronology play, Betrayal. I began wondering if it was possible for a thriller writer to pull off a backward-told story that was filled with the cliffhangers, surprises, and twists and turns that are, to me, the epitome of good crime fiction. The task, of course, is to present the twist, the reveal, as they say in Hollywood speak,
before giving the facts that led up to it, and still make the surprise thrilling. It's like telling a joke's punchline first, then giving the setup itself, yet making the audience laugh just as hard as if they'd heard the gag in proper order. It can be done. The bartender says, "We don't serve time travelers in here." A time traveler walks into a bar. Many, many post-it notes later, I plotted out and wrote The October List, a novel that begins with the last chapter and then moves backward in time, over the course of about 2 days to the first chapter. Though it's a bit shorter than most of my novels, I can say that it was more challenging, bite for bite, than anything I've previously written. Because of my heroine's passion for photography, I thought I would include images throughout the book at the beginning of each chapter. Some are merely illustrative, but some are clues as to mysteries the book holds, and some are twists in themselves. As Gabriella has said, there's something seductive about taking reality and working with it. Sometimes I make a literal image, sometimes I start there and manipulate it. Sometimes the end result is obscure, abstract. Only I know the truth. I couldn't agree more. Rather than give the titles to the pictures where they appear in the book, I thought it was best to include them in the table of contents. That surprise thing again. J.D., Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Acknowledgements. With special thanks for taking a chance on this one and helping me get as backward as was humanly possible, to Mitch Hoffman and Carolyn Mays. Thanks, too, to Jamie Hodder-Williams, Michael Peach, Jamie Robb, Lindsay Rose, Katie Rouse, and David Young. And I really appreciate all the juggling my regular crew did to keep this book on track and me more or less sane. Madeline Warchalik, Julie Deaver, Deborah Schneider, Kathy Gleason, Vivian Schuster, Betsy Robbins, Sophie Baker, Jane Davis, Will and Tina Anderson, and Hazel Orme. For Frank, Maureen, and Caitlin Jewett. This has been a Hachette Audio production of The October List, written by Jeffrey Deaver, read by January Lavoy. Produced and directed by Christine M. Farrell. Recorded at Audio Media Production. Post-production by Nikki Banks. The October List is also available in print and as an ebook from Grand Central Publishing, a division of Hachette Book Group. Text and photographs copyright 2013 by Gunner Publications, LLC. Audio production copyright 2013 Hachette Audio, all rights reserved. In accordance with the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, the duplicating, uploading, and electronic sharing of any part of this audiobook without the permission of the publisher is unlawful piracy and theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like to use material from the audiobook other than for review purposes, prior written permission must be obtained by contacting the publisher at permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales is entirely coincidental.